Okay, so today the topic is Prabhupada. And tomorrow we'll have a class on Gayatri Mantra. The two hot topics, top topics for this class. And then the other ones are a little bit less, you know, in the ultimate count of the votes. So since there's some God brothers and God sisters here, no doubt, as I tell some of the Leelas, that you'll also remember some other pastimes. So I think that, you know, if you feel inspired, then just give a wink or a nod, and then, you know, you can tell that one also. And this way we'll turn the ocean. These are just things that I've, you know, heard from Shruti Kirti, Prabhu, Harishavu, Prabhu, and various other voters, as we call them, things like this. So it's like every time I give this class, it comes out a little different. It's kind of dynamic and moving. It's alive. But basically, there's two kinds of leelas of Prabhupada that you'll see. And that is that when he exhibits his human-like nature, some human-like characteristics, being innocent or kind of maybe almost naive in some sense, like childlike, perhaps, in the words. And then the other pastimes when Prabhupada exhibits his superhuman nature. So, I haven't, you could think as we go along, you know, which one of the categories of the pastime will fall into. On the first day, we discussed some of Prabhupada's human-like natures, human-like pastimes, and he described how he was childlike when he first came to America. He came off of the Jaladutta, and he didn't know which way to turn, left or right. And although at the same time, you know, he knew what his mission was, and he was determined to do that, but we also saw that he went back to the steamship company again, and asking again and again, when will the next ship go back to Calcutta? I said, yeah, it's scheduled next week, Swamiji. I said, all right. And then he said, do you want to go? And I said, no, just wondering. he wasn't 100% sure how long he would stay there. But he was willing to give it, his best. But he didn't know what that was either. So when he ended up in Pennsylvania, then at the Agarwal house, then he was very amazed that Sally was in the kitchen and she would pull out some frozen vegetables from the freezer, and he would look, and she would, she would just break open the bag and throw it into the pot. And he would say, you don't cut the vegetables or freeze them? No, it's not necessary. And Prabhupada was like, amazed. Wow. So, he was childlike. He was like astonished. He used to watch the washing machine go around, almost like a television set. Because he never saw a washing machine in India. Ladies are just slapping the clothes. And so then, one morning he woke up and looked out the window. He saw that everything was all white. And he thought that somebody had painted everything white. That was the first snow that he ever saw. And people from tropical countries, they experience that when they come to the West. Because they're not... they never saw the snow before, in front of them. Maybe only in some pictures. So Prabhupada was like a little boy, and he thought, someone has whitewashed, you know, all the trees and all the fences and the ground. So there's snow coming down. And I told on Monday, or the first day, that Prabhupada, when he first went into the bathroom to shower, he had his bathtub. He didn't really know what it was for. So he thought, it's like a reservoir for holding water. So he filled it up, and he stood on the outside, and then he dipped in his cup and started on the outside, pouring out on the floor, on the door. Sally was walking by, and she looked at saw the water, and she said, oh, and knocked on the door, and, you know, Swamiji, what are you doing there? I said, just wait, I'm almost showering now. But no, Swamiji, my water's coming. Yes. Well, kept showering. And Sally's carpet was getting all wet. And he didn't know how to use the bathtub. he never had experience. You know, 70 years of showering Indian style. Naturally, you go to the West and you just do the same thing. I guess he just assumed that there was some hole in the floor and one of his things. It was going outside into the living room. So, Prabhupada exhibited his unique personality. And when he was on the plane with Shukakirti once, another new life pastime comes to mind, and he was enjoying it. Shukakirti had served him prasadam, and he was eating sardines and fruits. And then Prabhupada said, he was reminiscing with great fondness, and he said, when I was young, I never ate chapati, I would only eat puri. And he said, really? He said, yes, when I was a boy, I couldn't eat chapati. My parents, they only gave me puri. I didn't like chapati. And as I grew up, I only ate puris. And Prabhupada started laughing. He said, when I was a businessman, then it was embarrassing for me because people would invite me to their homes and I couldn't eat chapatis because I didn't like them. And I would say, well, do you have any puris? They said, no, we have, but here, take this chapati. And I would have to say, no, I don't like, and they would feel offended. And then what could I say? Oh, I only eat puris. Oh, you only eat puris. And Prabhupada was telling this in a very animated way with his eyes big and he was laughing. And he said, yes, it was so embarrassing. I didn't know what to do. People would invite me, and sometimes I would just get up and walk out of their house. Because I just didn't like puri. I didn't like the bun. And my servant, he tried to get me to eat chapatis. He made some chapatis. He said, please, you try this, Babu. And I said, no, I don't like chapatis. But you like my chapatis. He said, no, please. And that servant, again, he continuously tried to get the problem. Please, you try chapatis. No. And one time he was begging him, I promise you like my chapatis. Just try one. I promise you'll like it. And then he said, all right. So he brought a chapati and promised the chapati was puffy and it was hot and he liked it. And said, from that point on, I began eating chapatis. My life changed. In the same vein, once in this plane to L.A., Prabhupada was with Shukakirti, Pradyumna, and then one other phone on the plane, and stewardess came with the drinks, because when you're on the plane, you get dehydrated, because the air is recycled. So they want everyone to drink a lot. So they had 7-Up, orange juice, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and so the lady came with a tray and, would you like some drinks, gentlemen? And Prabhupada said, yes, what is that? What do you have? And she said, Sprite, Pepsi, Cola, orange juice, this stuff. And he said, what is that, 7 o'clock? and she said, yes, yeah, 7 o'clock. And he said, what is that from? And she gave him the can. He looked and said, oh, lemon juice, lemon, carbonated water, sugar. He said, oh, that looks good. All right, I'll take one of those. So she poured a cup and put it down and probably immediately drank it. And then, that's good. I'll take another. And so put down the can and Prabhupada, you know, looked at the can again and said, yes, these are all natural ingredients. And he drank it down again. So refreshing. And it's like a commercial. All natural ingredients. And immediately, as soon as Prabhupada got, you know, they lined it up for the boys, you know, everybody got 7 up, and they all started drinking. And then, you know, the boys were a little, you know, shy. We didn't drink soft drinks before. I guess it's okay. Prabhupada drinking. They started drinking. And
overnight, 7-Up became the drink.
Yeah, right. Overnight.
Yeah. Everyone was rushing to the 7-Up.
Yeah. So when they got to L.A., all the devotees came to Sri Kirti. What can we get for Prabhupada? What can we get? Maybe he would like something. We can buy anything. And he said, yeah, get a case of 7-Up. And I said, what? The boys were shocked. He said, yeah, he likes it. Are you sure? Yes, get a case of 7-Up. So they brought a big box of 7-Up, you know, bottles and put them in the kitchen under the table. And they stayed there for a week or something. He kind of forgot that they were there. And one day, Prabhupada was giving darshan to one temple president who had come from a long way to discuss some problems in the temple with Prabhupada. So he was there. Finally, he got his chance to talk to Prabhupada, and they were alone, so he was revealing his confidential worries to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was thirsty, so he rang the bell, and Sri Kirti came and said, can I ask, bring me some water? And I said, all right. And then he was ready, as he was walking out, he said, oh, would you like some 7-Up? And Prabhupada said, yes! All right, drink some 7-Up. So she went into the kitchen, he got Prabhupada's silver goblet, and cracked some ice cubes, put them in, you know, put the 7-Up, it was bubbling, and, you know, he brought it in there, nice and cold. And Prabhupada took the cup, and he drank it all down.
Very refreshing.
This is good. Would you like another? Yes. Ran in, you know, kitchen, came back, and Prabhupada was drinking it, and Shruti Kirti was there with the tray, and he said, this is so good. It's such a good drink, so refreshing. And he can begin, you know, commercialize natural ingredients made with lemon. And then Shruti Kirti said, you really like this? He said, yes. And then they started talking, and the temple president was getting a little unnerved because he was like interrupted in the middle of his talk. And now Prabhupada was having a small talk with Sri Kirti, and gradually, you know, he was, you know, fidgeting and looking at his watch. Sri Kirti looked at him and saw that he was like that. So then gradually he left. That's the 7-Up. And so overnight it became the most popular drink. Prabhupada would go to the temples and he would see cases of 7-Up, you know, stacked in the room. And he would say, what's that? With some bottles laying around. No, no, no. Now for a few superhuman ones. Prabhupada was in Vrindavan once, and he was guarding the door. he was told, make sure you don't let anybody in. And as he was standing in front of the door, he heard the Prabhupada speaking of someone. So he was a little shocked. Oh, did I let somebody, did somebody sneak in? Unbeknownst to him. Right under my nose, got right in there. Prabhupada said, how did anyone get in there? Oh my God. And so he just kind of opened the door slowly, looked through the crack. It was a little bit too loud. Turn it down a bit. Prabhupada was there, and he was like, speaking to somebody. He was preaching to somebody. You're in that body. How have you got there? You're conditioned by the modes of nature. Don't you know your original position? How is it that you're in such a position? You're coming this material world? And then, the devotee was thinking, Prabhupada was looking in the corner and he was, preaching. I said, oh, who was that? And then he pushed in a little further. And he saw her mouse sitting there. Preaching to the mouse. I've got this body. Just see what an embarrassing situation he got himself into.
Mouse was in trance.
Yeah. The mouse was there. The body just closed the door. And...
Lucky mouse.
Yeah. Reminds me of Jamuna's. Jamuna has probably the most amazing kind of mystical type of leelas. She was in, I think it was Oxford Town Hall when they did this program in England. And it was big kirtan, 69. And the boys were on the stage. He had Jamuna singing, leading kirtan. And the whole audience was like singing and some clapping and some were dancing too. And the devotees on stage were going wild. And it went on for almost an hour. And Prabhupada was chanting some verses during the kirtan. Jamuna heard. And she didn't know what he was chanting, but she heard the name Narad Muni in the prayers. So when they got, after the program was finished, they got back to the flat where they were staying in London at that time. Then she asked Swamiji, you were chanting some verses? And he said, yes, I was chanting some verses. And she said, some verses about Narada Muni, is that right? And he said, yes, Narada Muni was there. And she said, really? And he said, you mean you didn't see him? And she just opened. And he said, really? You mean you didn't see him? And she said, no. And he said, and Lord Brahma was there also. And then she looked more. And he said, and you didn't see him either? And he was astonished that she hadn't seen them. And he was speaking in such a way. And she was just flabbergasted. Another time, Jamuna was in Vrindavan, and she was cooking for Prabhupada, and bringing prasadam to him. He was in his room, but his kitchen was there as well, across the Radhadamodara temple. And the devotees were staying at the Keshagana that Raj from Jaipur and his palace, they were all staying at this place. Described in Hayagriva's, what is that?
Vrindavan days.
Vrindavan days.
Real restlessness.
Described in such wonderful detail. So many things happened during that time. I was just looking at all these leelas. One time, Jamuna was there with Prabhupada. Prabhupada was in his room and Jamuna was outside and no one else was around. And there was a lot of monkeys like coming and going at that time and And Prabhupada had some leelas with the monkeys. I guess we could tell a few of them too. So here's one that one monkey crawled into Prabhupada's window, and Jamuna saw that. So she was wondering, you know, how Prabhupada would, you know, deal with the monkey. So she was like outside of his door listening, you know, to, and kind of peeking in, but unseen by Prabhupada. So Prabhupada started speaking with the monkey in monkey talk. Some kind of sounds like this. And then the monkey would talk back, and the Prabhupada would say something. And Jamuna was just, again, you know, just dumbfounded. And then, you know, Prabhupada, you know, speak something like this. And then the monkey just got left and went out the window. And then Jamuna just was like, really, you know, taking her back. So she just thought, wow, what happened just now? And she just kind of went in and you know, like stunned, and offered her a basis. And she just looked. She said, Prabhupada, what just happened? And Prabhupada just nonchalantly said, oh, a monkey came in. And I just told her, you know, that I'm very busy translating the Bhagavad Gita. Would she please leave and not come back and bother me anymore? And so she left. And Prabhupada just continued his work. And then
he just walked out.
Another time, Prabhupada was in the kitchen. He tells on the tape, one time a monkey came in, and there was a monkey and her baby, and the little baby crawled through a hole in the window, you know, through the bars, and the, of course the mother couldn't, and but the, you know, the mother became afraid, and you know, oh, my child's there, because then Prabhupada came over, and she was like very much worried, and you know, very obviously agitated. So then, and the baby was a very small monkey baby, and so Prabhupada just kind of ushered the monkey baby to the back through the window bars, and then the mother was like greatly relieved. And she said how much the mother is attached to the child, and that time. But in that same room, he another time he was there with Shruti Kirti, and a monkey came in, and Prabhupada saw the monkey, and he grabbed his tilak, and he just winged it across the room. And you know, like, Shruti Kirti was like right there, and the tilak just kind of just missed his head. And he thought, wow, what's going on? What did I do? You know, but then I said, there's a monkey, get him, quick! And the monkey grabbed Prabhupada's slipper, and then ran up the stairs and ran onto the roof. And he was sitting on the edge. He says, get some burpee, quick, go. Grab my cane, we'll get the slipper back. So he grabbed some burpee, ran up the stairs, and he was, Prabhupada came out, and Shruti Kirti was offering the burpee to trade for the shoe. And the monkey, you know, showed that he was interested in the burpee, and he came closer holding, you know, carefully guarding the slipper, and he came closer and he tried to make some deal with the monkey. And the monkey said, oh yes, okay. So then the monkey held out the shoe, and Shruti Kirti held out the burpee, and then finally he just grabbed the burpee and just ran back, and he was eating the burpee. And the Prabhupada said, oh, you... And he said, try again. And so the same thing happened. There was this bartering thing. And again, the monkey grabbed the burpee. He was very quick. And then Prabhupada said, oh, you did it again. So then the monkey was, you know, feeling very proud of himself, triumphant that he had gotten free burpee, and he still had the shoe. Just to add more misery. he started chewing on the shoe, and chewing and chewing and ripping it, and then Prabhupada just, no, it's too late now. And he just went back inside. And then when the monkey saw that they were had given up, then the monkeys dropped the shoe on the other kind of ground. So later they got up and ran up and got the shoe. There was a child there actually. The child came and got the shoe over there. So Prabhupada, then they showed it to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, oh, it's not so bad. I can still use this. Then for a year later, he kept wearing those sandals, even though they had these, teeth marks, and it was ripped, and, Prabhupada didn't like to waste anything. Flashing back to England, as I mentioned, Oxford Hall, there was different programs. That once in Edinburgh, there was a program in the early days, and they advertised, and of course everything was free, and many people came, and they had a kirtan, and Prabhupada was there. And some street children had come in, just right off the street. They were real street urchins, very dirty and unkept. Obviously, childless homes, childless children, homeless children. And so they were dancing in the kirtan, and Prabhupada was encouraging them. He was smiling, and he was motioning to them, jump, and dance. And they were dancing and looking at Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was smiling at them and moving his head back and forth in satisfaction. And this went on for about 45 minutes. And it was obvious that there was some kind of rapport that Prabhupada had, with the children. So then Prabhupada gave a very powerful lecture. And the people, at the end, they stood up, they gave a standing ovation for about 6 or 7 minutes. I mean, that's a long time, waiting and waiting, people just clapping and clapping. And, it was really, the people were overwhelmed by the program. So afterwards, they all jumped into a car and they went to a hotel where Prabhupada was going to stay, and then fly out the next morning. So naturally the devotees started talking about the program. Shibhubhanath was there, Dhananjaya, and maybe one other devotee. And they asked Prabhupada, how did he like the program? And he said, oh yes, it was very good. The people, they appreciated so much. But Dhananjaya was, he said, oh yeah, it was nice. But those children, Prabhupada, and he was rather disgusted by the dirty children that were kind of snuck in there. And Prabhupada said, yes, those children, they were very great devotees.
Wow.
And Dhananjaya was a little shocked. He said, but Prabhupada, they were so filthy. And Prabhupada said, no, doesn't matter. You shouldn't criticize them in that, because they're not being cared for. They're unkept because they have no one to care for them. But you shouldn't criticize them because of that. That's just external. But actually, they were very great devotees. So not only they were devotees, they were very great devotees.
Well, they got Prabhupada's
blessing. If they did join it, maybe it was much later. There was another time in Los Angeles, 70s, 72, I think, 73. And Prabhupada was in his room, in his quarters. And he was with Karandar and Hridayananda Maharaj, only two devotees. And it was in the afternoon, and Prabhupada was sitting against his bolster pillow on his chair, just kind of relaxing. And the afternoon sun was beaming in through the window, making him look even more golden and effulgent than he was naturally. And he was reminiscing about the old days in Calcutta. And he said, yes, I appeared, I was born in Calcutta. That time, people were very pure. People would work hard, and at the end of the day, they would come to their neighborhoods and sit under the cool evening stars in the breeze, evening breeze, and they would hear Ramayana and Mahabharata and shlokas from the Gita. People were very pure at that time. They said the Brahmins were so pure that they wouldn't allow anyone to cook for them, not even their own wives. And you could see them lining up on the road with their chulis, and they were cooking their rice and vegetables. The Brahmins, they were all lined up along the street, the roadside, they were cooking. And he said, yes, that was the atmosphere at that time. He said, and as a boy, when I grew up, I had my Rath Yatra ceremony every year. My father bought a cart for me, and I put Jagannath on it, and I would have a Rath Yatra in my neighborhood. And all the people would come for my Rath Yatra, because they knew that it was an authorized, bona fide Rath Yatra. And I would distribute prasadam to all the neighbors, and they would all come. And don't think that it was the play of a child. No. He says, whatever I'm doing now, I was doing then. Do you understand? He said, there was never a time when I was not thinking of Krishna. Do you understand? And he looked at them in a very meaningful way. Now, Prabhupada was a great Vaishnava gentleman, and naturally he would never disclose openly, especially in the public, about his actual position. But in the confidence of his room with his close disciples, only two of them, even then he was just hinting at his position, that he had appeared in the world at a very pure time, and right from childhood he was always thinking of Krishna and worshipping Krishna, and he said it wasn't the play of a child. And he said that I'm doing this my whole life. I never did anything different. Whatever I was doing then, I'm doing now. Whatever I'm doing now, I did at that time. And then there was never a time when I was not conscious of Krishna. And he said, do you understand? And Prabhupada, in this pastime, it became clear that he is Nityasiddha. And Bhavananda Prabhu tells probably one of the most revealing pastimes of Prabhupada's superhuman nature. When Prabhupada went to Africa, Kenya, and at that time there was yellow fever. So in order to come back to India, everyone had to have yellow fever vaccination and inoculation and have a card to prove that they got this vaccination. So they got these vaccinations, but somehow Bhavananda lost them.
The card.
Yeah, the card. And so when they flew into Bombay from Kenya, from Nairobi probably, and then the authorities, immigration authorities, asked to see the cards, and you know, he's like looking, he couldn't find. He said, "Oh, I'm sorry, Prabhupada, I can't find the card." And then they said, "I'm sorry, Swamiji, but you'll have to stay in quarantine. We can't let you in the country until we make sure that you don't have this fever." And so, and then he said, well, how long will that be? 18 days. You know, 18 days, almost 3 weeks. After the initial shock, you know, they brought Prabhupada to some place in the airport, and it was kind of like a fenced-off area, which was comfortable, but at the same time, he couldn't leave that place. It was a quarantine. So him, and they allowed Bhavananda to stay there with him. So Prabhupada just settled into the place and started with his, you know, his usual schedule. He would rise early and start to translate, and you know, he had all these things. And so he was chanting. He started chanting a lot more that time, because there was no preaching for disciples or, you know, guests. So he would translate, and he did a lot of chanting. So after some days, they also had brought like a rocking chair, and Prabhupada was sitting in a kind of screened area in the warm evening air. He was rocking and chanting, and Bhavananda was sitting on the ground next to him. And Prabhupada said, I didn't want to come to this nasty place. And Bhavananda thought he was referring to the, you know, the room they were in. So he thought, because he was still feeling guilty. Oh, sorry, Prabhupada, I couldn't find those cards. I'm sorry that... And Prabhupada said, no, I'm not talking about this place. I'm talking about this place, the material world. I didn't want to come to this nasty place. And he said, and I told Krishna that I don't like this. Krishna asked me to come here. And I said, but I don't like this material world. There's too many austerities. I'm not inclined to perform austerities. Because in the spiritual world, you know, every word is a song, every step is a dance, and the water is like nectar. It's blissful there. And the material world is full of misery and death, and ill and sickness, and so many bad things. So Prabhupada was describing how he didn't want to come, but Krishna asked him to come. Actually, there's two kinds of Nityasiddha Parikars that descend to the earth. One comes out of his compassion for the people, and the other one is chosen by the Lord to come and request by the Lord. So Prabhupada is in the second category according to this pastime. So Krishna asked him, please go there. Said, but it's such an austere place, I don't want to come. And he said, don't worry, I'll take care of everything. You just write books and preach, and I'll take care of everything. Don't worry, you just go. And Bhavananda had moved closer, you know, hoping Prabhupada would say more. But that was the end of the conversation.
The last part of that was that Prabhupada knew those cards were not that unavailable. He knew where they were within a few days. I mean, he didn't go the 18 days, maybe a week. You probably want to take a break from the traveling.
Oh, all right, that's right.
He wanted to do more translation. So he said, you look in this case, and they found it. Prabhupada is under Krishna's control, no one else is that. So the Prabhupada can choose.
That's true. I remember that. He wanted to have a break. Yes. Another time, I was in Hyderabad, again, I think 72, and they had a big pandal. No, it was later, actually, I'm sorry. It was, the Prabhupada was very ill. What happened? was in the Pakistan. It was in Delhi, actually. There was a problem. The Prabhupada was very ill. So much so that they had to bring him on a palanquin onto the Vyasa Center. And he was just kind of... He wasn't sitting straight. He was very ill. And he couldn't speak. So he asked Bhavananda to give the lecture. And so they brought the microphone. Bhavananda was sitting next to his Vyasa son, and he began reading from the Bhagavatam. Savidvara hosta karai, samstuta purushal pashu. This verse, you know. Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses never listen to the pastimes of the Lord, and so forth. And he was reading, you know, if you look at this commentary, Prabhupada, you know, it's a very strong commentary. He's criticizing. It's a scathing commentary, and he's really, socking to the atheists, the materialists, and everybody. So as Bhavananda, you know, he was also very expressive and very dramatically reading this. And as Prabhupada was hearing it, gradually he was getting more excited and more inspired, and gradually he started slowly moving up, you know. It's like he was like pumping up Prabhupada's body with the words from his commentary. And by the end of it, Prabhupada was sitting up straight, and he had this very, you know, conviction on his face, this expression of power. And then Prabhupada just grabbed the microphone and popped up and he started preaching like a liar, you know, and he started just shouting. You know, and Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, this place is a material place, it's temporary, full of misery. And you've all come into this world, we should all go back to this spiritual world. The Prabhupada was like a lion. It's just an amazing lecture. And the devotees were also shocked to see that he was, you know, from like a mouse, you know, being ill, and then he became like a lion. And then at the end, they stop and ask for questions. So there was like a queue of people, you know, they were asking questions. So Prabhupada was criticizing the materialists so much, and one man came forward, a businessman, and said, "You've criticized the usual affairs of our business world. Men coming and going back to work and so on and so forth. Why are you criticizing?" Like this. He says, a man has to go on the subway to work and then back. You're criticizing such type of life, but I disagree. And then Prabhupada spoke very softly. He said, "Well, it's for a man to go every day for 2 hours, packed up like fish in a can, and go to work, and then to stay inside the office all day, and then again to come into the subway for an hour or two, and squeeze together with so many people, it is unnatural, it is not right." And then the man was, his heart was like charmed by Prabhupada's humility and his emotion, and changed him. And then the man said, "Yeah, I see now. I agree." Prabhupada said, "Agree, agree. Why disagree? Sit down." The man actually fell back into his seat, his chair, right? Because he was so Prabhupada spoke so powerful. Then another one lady came forward and said, "Swamiji, you're telling about chanting the mantra and following all of the regulations, but doesn't this chanting is so again and again, so many times, doesn't it tax the brain? It's such a thing again and again, chanting, doesn't it tax the brain?" And Prabhupada said, "Tax the brain? Tax?" He said, "You're paying so many kinds of taxes. You're paying taxes in the store, you're paying taxes to the government, you're paying taxes for import, for export. What do you know about this? Sit down." The lady also. It
It was almost as if Prabhupada was like physically pushing them. Because they would kind of go away. Then that young student came forward and he started like criticizing. And he said, how can you prove God's existence with logic? And Prabhupada said, what do you know about logic? What does logic mean? What is your definition of logic? And the boy was like, and he said, what do you know about logic? He said, a man is born from his father, and he's born from his father, and his father's father. If you go back, the original father, that's God, that's logic. Now sit down. And that boy also. And Prabhupada was like, just knocking them down like in a bowling alley, you know, a bowling pin. And the devotees were just amazed. They couldn't believe it. And then at the end...
I think you could do that with Indian people, but it would be different preaching you to the Americans, because there's so much more problem. Yeah.
So then Prabhupada just kind of went back down, and then they had to pick him up and put him on the palanquin, and again, he couldn't even walk. But it was just for those moments when he was like, so powerful.
Yes. Prabhupada's last public appearance here in Mayapur, you know, was in Gopurnima in 77. And the same situation is there. Prabhupada was very ill, and he had to bring Prabhupada. He actually didn't give Bhagavatam for the last 7 days or something. But they brought him on palanquin, and he was really ill. He could barely even stand on palanquin. Mm-hmm. And put him, they had to take 2 or 3 devotees to put him on to the Vyasa Sangha. But he was very eager to preach. There was 30,000 Bengalis. So he started preaching in Bengali, but he was like slumped and barely audible. But within 10 minutes, his energy was coming back, you know. And then within 20 minutes, he was roaring like a lion. It was amazing. We couldn't understand the language, but it was awesome. It was like a miracle for our eyes. And we could follow, Prabhupada would quote the Bhagavad Gita in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. We could sort of get the gist of it. Mm-hmm. But he was amazing. He said, Prabhupada just revived. And we were awed and just moved, you know, to see that. Prabhupada is a preaching incarnation, so awed, so empowered. Every opportunity here.
He loved preaching so much.
Stop.
Gave me so much energy.
He said, yeah, well, I want to die in the battlefield.
Yeah. Like Arjuna with that good song.
Fighting for Krishna until the very last breath. That's Prabhupada's example.
Yeah, and he still died in New York in the elevator as they were coming down. He said, I want to die like Arjuna with my on the battlefield. With my boots on.
Did Arjuna die on the
battlefield?
Huh? Did Arjuna die on the battlefield?
No.
No, he fought on the
put his life on the line.
Wasn't that, that was it, Prabhupada was responding to somebody telling him not to go traveling or something, didn't he? Didn't he say just to stay, he said, Prabhupada, everybody was pleading for him to stay and not to travel because he was going to London or something like that. I think he was going to London, he was doing another tour around the world and doing American stuff. And they pleaded, and he just turned, and I remember reading this in Yerba Roa, she just turned and like, looked at him really sternly and said, I want to die like Arjuna on the battlefield. It's more appropriate, more glorious to die on the battlefield. That's what that, more glorious to die on the battlefield, yeah.
Actually, Tamal Krishna Maharaj kind of mentioned this to him, because he knew that Prabhupada liked that, and that's probably Prabhupada energy. So he wanted, because Prabhupada was thinking of leaving and his mind was going that way. So he tried to make Prabhupada think of preaching and inspiring the troops in the West and like this. And so that would give Prabhupada, you know, will to live. Because he had already given up. another time.
Do you remember there's a story of how Sama Prabhupada was again very, very ill? Then he got the DVT book, the book distribution report, and he became very enlightened.
Well, that happened regularly in Vrindavan in the last day. And they would read the reports to him about book distribution. Yeah, that happens, you know, every few days during that time. Remember, Aharya tells that they were here in Mayapur, and Prabhupada was invited to the Samadhi of Mahesh Pandit, which is 2 hours from here. It's more towards, more closer to Calcutta. And Harishari understood that the place wouldn't be organized very well, or so many devotees, or so many people. So he saw how Prabhupada was so ill, so he suggested to him that, he asked him, "Well, Prabhupada, why do you have to go? Why can't you just, there's so many sannyasis here, why don't we just send one of them?" And Prabhupada said, "No, the man asked me, so I should go." So then Harishari was serving Prabhupada, and then a little bit later, when he saw that Prabhupada was preparing to go to the program, again he mentioned the same thing. So he said, "But why do you have to go? Why can't we send someone else? Because there's not going to be many people. And any of your disciples could do this program. It's obvious that it's going to weaken your health is already weak, and it won't be very good for you." And he said, "No, he asked me, and so I'm going." And that should have been it, you know. But Aishwarya was just kind of pushing. And so he kept insisting. And then gradually, Prabhupada felt impinged upon his pushing, so he stood up very straight and he raised his finger, and without even saying it, he was like that. Harishari realized that he went over the line. I mean, the disciple can say to the guru something about taking care of his health, but there was a certain point that Prabhupada felt that he crossed that border. So that he gave him this look, very stern look.
There was another time, I think, the time when he was before the elevator bit, before his devotees had actually convinced him not to go, he said, they were all bugging him, and then he said, okay, I won't go. And then, but he was still bound by all the plane tickets and things like that. So he still ended up going. But he had actually given in to the devotees' request for him not to go. Like, at the time, they were all like, "Come on, Prabhupada, you shouldn't go. You know, you're sick," and all these kinds of things, and trying to convince him not to go. And he said, okay, because he saw that they were becoming very, his heart was very ill, and they were very concerned about it, so he wanted to make him happy. But then he had to leave anyway because of his tickets. So he left anyway. But he gave him.
So that's the external, but internally you want to reciprocate with the very eager desire of the loving devotees. Reciprocate with their service. That's what Prabhupada was the most attached to, is the loving exchange with his disciples. Mm-hmm.
Prabhupada's health at the end became very bad. But even when he was still healthy, there were different things that happened which showed his superhuman nature. Yeah. Once they went, I believe it was in Bombay or nearby, they went to a program in the Indian home. And Prabhupada gave a lecture. They were sitting in the living room. Prabhupada was on a dais, on asana. And they were sitting, there was a marble floor, and they had some asanas. In front of Prabhupada there was a carpet. Harishara was there. And after the lecture, Prabhupada stood up. He was going to the WC, and he went to step down, and he put his foot on the carpet and it just slid right out from under him. And his, with his whole, the whole weight of his body came down on the edge of the asan, a piece of wood, and it was right into his hip. And anyone else would have just screamed. And it happened so fast that Harshari was not able to, you know, do anything, just kind of... So, and Prabhupada hit himself very hard right there. And, but he didn't even say anything. Not even the ouch or nothing, not even a sound. He just stood up, looked a little concerned, you know, rubbed his hip, and then he just walked gracefully to the bathroom. And Arsar was shocked. He'd never seen such kind of tolerance and, you know, being completely transcendental to the body.
Was in Toronto in 76, and extremely bad abscess teeth, and the devotees had made a lot of engagements. Mm. He had a radio thing, and there was a lot, and they were trying to arrange for some of this thing for some reason. Was there three or four? Several days, and nobody could see him. They couldn't do anything. I think they had to wait for the infection or something, but Prabhupada through it all, I mean, it was visibly, you can see that it's visibly swollen. He just did all his preaching, he gave classes, he just went as if nothing. Yeah. Has anyone ever had an abscess tooth? A really bad abscess tooth? It's excruciating, it's all you can think of. You can't do anything.
And all he did was put a cloth in it.
he just did all the preaching, did morning walks, everything. He wasn't disturbed.
Yeah.
Just...
On Prabhupada's teeth, that's what you were doing?
No, I was thinking of a related, well, Kavirats said during the last days of Prabhupada's life, he said no ordinary mortal man, he said Prabhupada's whole body was burning up and no mortal person could have tolerated. They would have had to have left their body much prior because there would have been so much excruciating pain.
Mm-hmm.
He stuck around as long as he wanted to.
Yeah. And about the teeth, interesting. I remember one pastime, probably, sometimes Harshara mentioned that he would take his meal and sometimes teeth would fall out during his prasadam. And then he would just leave it on the plate. And, you know, Harshara would comment, Prabhupada, another tooth? Prabhupada said, yes, they're all rotten. They should all fall out, actually. It's a miracle that some of them are staying. He said, only because of he made his own toothpaste. It was made from crushed mustard seeds, glycerin, salt.
Thymol.
Huh?
Thymol.
Thymol? That's like menthol.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Like menthol.
Gave the recipe to
Richard
Moon, like it was austere toothpaste.
Yeah.
I
used
it. Now part of the last word.
Mustard seed and salt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, mustard oil and salt, it's quite really does the job.
We used to make it in Chicago, remember?
Yeah.
Pretty austere.
Yeah, it's very good for your teeth. So that is keeping my teeth in. Only by the toothpaste that he made, because he was a chemist. So he knew how to make these things.
At one point, was the prophet proud of showing all his teeth? He said, "These are my original teeth."
Yeah. It was at John Lennon's estate in Tittenhurst. The gardener there was a 60-year-old man, and he was puttering around taking care of the garden. Prabhupada would take a walk in the morning and he would say hello, good morning, and the man would say good morning. And Prabhupada sometimes chatted with him in a very friendly way. Because Prabhupada was, this is the human side, right? And Prabhupada would just talk to him in a friendly way. How are you? And how long have you been doing this? Oh, a long time. Been a horticulturalist. and what kind of tree is that, and what kind of bush is that, and then, you know, this relationship kind of sprouted. And one day, Prabhupada was talking with him, and he said, how old are you? And he said, 60. And the Prabhupada said, do you have all of your original teeth? And then the man smiled and said, no, I said, I have some false teeth. And Prabhupada said, I'm 70, and I have all of my original teeth. A big smile. But sometimes they would fall out, and Harisari, you know, he kept one, and he said that it was big cavity there, and there was all cumin seeds and poppy seeds inside of the tooth, you know. The prasadam was there.
Did Prabhupada just like put them back in sometimes, or?
No.
Well, almost. Because he said at the end of the meal, Prabhupada would take a tooth pick and he would clean his teeth, but when he did that, they would move. The teeth, you know, Prabhupada would, you know, would clean them with the toothpick, but Harisari would notice that the teeth were, you know, teeth were shifting when he would put the, with the toothpick in. They would move. Said they were all rotten, they were all ripped. They should have fallen out years ago, probably. But he, yeah, in that sense, you could say he kept them in there with his homemade toothpaste. And Harisari had a tooth, and but then Tamal Krishna Maharaj told him that, wait a minute, you have this, after Prabhupada left, you know, you have this tooth, it's a very special thing. It should be in the museum or something, you know. It's Prabhupada's body. You know, and Harisari took the hint, and actually he donated to one of the temples in Australia, Sydney, Melbourne, maybe. They have it on the altar. And it's in kind of plastic, you know, encased in plastic and in some kind of...
Maybe that's why Australia's doing so well.
You know, so then the tooth. But he said that Tamal Krishna Maharaj had his own tooth, and he keeps it in the... he kept it in the locket. Kept it in the locket. Around his neck. When I was on the plane with Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he gave us darshan. It was Govardhan Puja, so he said, give us Govardhan darshan. he showed Prabhupada's tooth to us on the plane.
It's
for him
in the body.
What's that?
The tooth is in samadhi with his body.
Oh, right.
He said like this, when they give obeisances, they also give obeisances to Prabhupada because the tooth is... He wanted that in his testament, but the tooth was with his body.
Mm-hmm.
Can you remember this better than I can? I think Shamsunar Guru told the story of Puri Putra. I believe there was a chauffeur, he was also an older person, and Prabhupada had given a really fired up lecture somewhere, and the chauffeur nudged Prabhupada in the side and said, hey, you really got on that time, Swami. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Yeah, like, that's about all I remember.
It was a kirtan. There's a nice lecture in the kirtan.
It was really in London, ecstatic after, wasn't it? It was in London.
London. Yeah, in London. The kirtan was really ecstatic after Prabhupada. He was dancing in the kirtan.
Oh, okay.
He was chauffeur. The chauffeur in midway, Prabhupada. They hired him for like a week or something.
Right.
Like, so he then hey, you really got a little out of control there, Swami. But it's just like you say, you know, the body's a car and the soul's a driver. You can relate to it. You know?
Yeah, man.
Prabhupada preached to him on that level, exactly. Car and driver.
Connected.
Oh, I remember a devotee from England named Charanaravindam, a little eccentric person. He had long, when I came to England, he had long hair, he was wearing brahmachari clothes, beard, and he would keep his hair in a top knot, like that. Yeah. He was an eccentric person, and in the early days in the manor, when they had kirtan, he would dance in a very unusual way. Almost like an Egyptian priest or something. You know, he was very strange. Couldn't even imitate it, you know. And when I came to England, he was still doing that in the kirtan. I remember. He would move his head kind of back and forth, like very strange. He had beard, and hair was like, and he had brahmachari clothes. He was tall. You know. So when Prabhupada came and he was doing this, you know, dancing like this, you know, then, you know, Tamal Krishnamurti was like looking at him very sternly. You know, what is this guy? What's he doing? And then Tamal Krishnamurti asked him, Prabhupada, what do you think about this person's dancing? You know, and he said, oh, it's very nice. And Charanaravinda made the fountain in Prabhupada's garden in Vrindavan, you know, that lotus fountain. He was asked to do that. But Dhananjaya was a little worried because, well, they asked him to make a fountain. They didn't ask him to make it so big. You know, it takes up like half of the garden or more. You know. So all the leaders were a little worried when he had finished, and then decided to show it to Prabhupada. So they called Prabhupada to come. And Prabhupada came, and all the sannyasis were there, the temple president, all the leaders, you know, and all the devotees from everywhere, they tried to pack in, and, you know, they were looking, and they said, here's the fountain, Prabhupada. And everybody, because they were a little worried, you know, is he going to like it? And everybody was like looking at Prabhupada's face to see what expression he would give. So then Prabhupada looked at it, and he didn't show any, but he said, can make the water come? And so they, you know, ran immediately, turned on the water, and the water, and it came down on the earth, and then Prabhupada looked and said, it's very nice. And then everyone, relief, you know. So the devotees left, because many didn't wear shoes, or they were kind of brought in a lot of sand and dust into the room. So Prabhupada looked at it and said, oh, just see, it's dirty. You should clean it, told to Dhananjaya, I believe. And Charanaravinda was there and said, oh, but Prabhupada, that's not dirt. That's dust from the Vaishnava's feet. And Prabhupada said, oh, just see, I am seeing dirt, but you are seeing Vaishnava dust. You are the real Vaishnava.
Wow.
In the sarcastic way. <Thank you. laughs> But this Charanaravinda made the Vyasasana in the Soba temple also for Prabhupada. You know. He was a very gifted person, artistic. In Vrindavan, there was this Devananda Maharaj. Oh, yes. Well, in another time, he was massaging Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was in a very good mood. He started joking. And he said that he said, I only have one desire. I just want to I want to taste kachoris from Krishna's lunchbox. He says, I have no diversion from this. I want to take kachori. And the devotees, and then Prabhupada was laughing and smiling and joking and said, And he said, if you give me Pachuri, I'll give you a special blessing. And then the devotee said, oh, Prabhupada, you show us how to make Pachuris. You show us. We'd like to make them for you. And Prabhupada said, yes, I will teach you. I will show you how to make them. And he continued speaking in a very nice way. So that was Devananda was massaging him out. But later, this Devananda went away. And he came back to see Prabhupada. But he was either intoxicated or almost insane by that time. He came into Vrindavan, and Brahmananda and Shrutakirti were in the room. And so this Devananda came into Prabhupada's room. He was wearing long, flowing, bright satin orange robes and long hair, and he didn't offer his obeisances to Prabhupada. And he began speaking to Prabhupada in a very strange way that nobody could understand what he was saying. It was so incoherent. He was like either intoxicated or mad. And while he was speaking, he was making these like mudras with his hands. And it was so bizarre, the way he was speaking and the hand movements, that it was, Shrutakirti said that he couldn't even actually bear to look at it. It was because it was like offensive to Prabhupada. He was saying, speaking in a strange way. And then, so Prabhupada just tolerated that. He let him speak for a few minutes like this. And then Prabhupada said, all right then, if you want to come back, then you become like him. And he pointed to Brahmananda. And he said, you shave up, wear dhoti, tila, and you can come back. But then Devananda, he said, no, that's not why I've come. I've not come to ask for this. And then he began speaking again in a very strange way, flailing his arms around and, you know, in a very strange way. And then Prabhupada just, you know, he probably just shouted, get up! And then Brahmananda just took a hold of him and escorted him to the door. But it showed that how merciful Prabhupada was, that he was willing to accept such a disciple backing him, even though he was, you know, was tottering on the brink of insanity and offense, and he was willing to accept him back. But then when he saw that he wasn't willing to accept any instruction and he didn't want to surrender, then Prabhupada told him to get out before he made any further offense. In Stockholm, Sweden, Prabhupada was there and gave a lecture. There were many students. Prabhupada was speaking about the varnashram system. So he was describing first class man, second class man, third class woman. At the end of the lectures, the students, who were very rebellious, one of them raised his hands. He raised his hand and said, you're sitting on a big chair, beautifully decorated with flowers. It's obvious that you think that you're a first-class man, don't you? So offensive. And Prabhupada became silent for a moment. All the devotees were concerned. Oh, what's going to happen? And Prabhupada, on his breath, he said, no, I'm not a first-class man. I'm a fifth-class man because I'm all your servants. Because I'm serving of all of you. And a tear came from underneath his glasses and rolled down his cheek. And then he spoke. He said, if I have any qualification, it is only because I follow the orders of my Guru Maharaj. And if this Krishna consciousness movement is successful at all, it's only because we have followed the principles of Guru and Guru. And all the people were very much impressed by Prabhupada's humility. And the boy also just sat down. He was defeated. by his humility. Prabhupada's humility was so deep that sometimes he didn't even have to say anything. Like in Hyderabad now, he was there with Harikesh Maharaj and Shyam Sundar. And some local Indian men had come to visit Prabhupada, maybe 12, 15 of them, the whole group. So they all entered into his room, and but their plan was to criticize Prabhupada. They weren't there in a friendly way. So they surrounded Prabhupada. They were all standing in the room, and they all surrounded Prabhupada, and they began criticizing him. And they began shouting at him, and pointing their fingers at him, and accusing him that you have spoiled Hindu Dharma. You have given mantras, Vedic mantras, to the heathens, to the malechas. And you have given Gayatri mantra to these persons and sannyas. How can you have done such a thing? You have spoiled our Hindu Dharma. How dare you do such a thing? And they began shouting at him and raising their voice. They were pointing their finger. And Harikesh was standing outside of the room looking in, and he was shocked. He was like angry. He felt like going in there and just fighting them. And so then he ran to Shyam Sundar and said, Shyam Sundar, all these men are all shouting at Prabhupada, they're criticizing him. Let's go in. I felt like just beating them. And Shyam said, no, don't do that. Don't just, let's wait. Let's watch what happens. Let's just wait. So then they both waited on the outside of the door, and all of the men were there shouting at Prabhupada, criticizing him. And Prabhupada just stood there with his head down, his head hanging down and feeling humble. In that mood of humility, gradually, the volume of their shouting went down, until there was no sound left. And gradually, one by one, they just left the room. And after 10 minutes, they were all gone. And Prabhupada just defeated them because by his humility, he didn't say a word, he just looked down.
They wouldn't have heard anyway.
Yeah, of course. It was useless to argue with such men.
Very similar parallel to Van Ratten in summer 74 in Paris. Devotees had organized a big program for Prabhupada in the Salle Pleyel, which was one of the big venues there. Big concert hall, a couple of thousand seats. It was pretty well filled because they had put posters all across Paris. But there was some. There was a lot of these petty socialists or communists, and they a good numbers of them went, and they started heckling Prabhupada. You know? And they especially sort of insulted Prabhupada by saying, descendez, because Prabhupada was on the Vyasa song. Beautiful.
Get down.
Get off the big seat.
Yeah.
And so finally Prabhupada addressed that, you know, by saying, I am sitting here because I'm offering authorized knowledge. And if anyone has real knowledge to offer, I will gladly let them sit in my place. Is there anyone with the real knowledge? And so the whole hall was like, yeah, well, I guess. My Prabhupada was very humble in saying that I'm simply offering authorized knowledge. And it sort of won them over. They were totally antagonistic, and Prabhupada just diffused the whole situation with his purity. Like, remarkable.
There was a nice one that I remember from your Rawalisha, Prabhupada was giving lecture, and a young man was in there, and he was being offensive to Prabhupada. He got up and started saying something. I forget what he was saying. There was some subject going on, and then the younger man got up and started yelling at Prabhupada. And Prabhupada just grabbed, I think he was cutting an apple, or he had an apple and a knife nearby, and he just sat there very quietly, cut a slice out of the apple, put the apple and the knife in his hand and handed it to the boy, like that. And then everybody was like, kind of staring like that, and waiting to see what happened, and the boy came, took the piece of apple, and then Prabhupada just continued like that.
So, yeah.
That was like right in that
National Gift.
New York.
One time, Prabhupada was, one devotee asked Prabhupada, "Shri Prabhupada, is the super soul standing or sitting?" Prabhupada closed his eyes and he's standing. Another time it was Jadarani who was asked to do some paintings, and she asked him, because she had to paint the super soul. So she asked him also, "Is he standing or sitting or what is he doing?" And Prabhupada said, "It would take you hundreds of years to realize this." So then she became a little morose. "What am I going to do?" And he said, "But I can tell you, he's standing." And the reporters in the airports, they would often, you know, ask Prabhupada, you know, questions. You know. One man, he came, a reporter, and said, "Swamiji, Swamiji, can you see God? Can you see God?" Prabhupada said, "Yes." And the man was shocked. "Really? Swamiji, you can see God? I mean, can you see God like I'm seeing you? Like that, can you see God?" And Prabhupada said, "Yes." And the man was, "Really, Swamiji, you're telling me you can actually see God?" He said, "Yes." And then started writing. His conviction was so strong.
Yet another time, in a similar situation, Prabhupada saying, "So you're teaching about God, you know, and anyway, it was a similar exchange." And Prabhupada said, "Well, actually, I'm simply the servant of God." And Prabhupada said, "No, I'm aspiring to become a servant of God."
In London, he would walk often. When they had the Bird Place Temple, they would go on morning walks past the British Museum, and there would be some very prim and proper British gentlemen, you know, with bowler hats and suits and ties, and they had umbrellas and, you know, briefcases. This kind of people walking around, and sometimes Prabhupada would walk past them, and they would. Prabhupada would sometimes greet them, "Good morning, sir." And the man would say, "Good morning." And this way, Prabhupada was, you know, being friendly to the local people. So, this happened a few times. And the brahmacharis were wondering, you know, why, you know, the staunch brahmacharis were wondering, why does Prabhupada say good morning? Why not Hare Krishna? And the next day, the same thing happened. On the walk, Prabhupada saw a man. Even the man didn't say good morning, but Prabhupada said, "Good morning." And the man said, "Good morning." And then, so then one devotee asked Prabhupada, why do you say good morning? Why not Hare Krishna? And Prabhupada explained that, well, if I say Hare Krishna, then they won't respond. But if I say good morning, then they'll wish all the devotees a good morning. And this way, they begin their spiritual life. And the devotees go, "Oh."
Sometimes a good morning is worth more than a Hare Krishna.
And that's what I'm saying.
If you can connect, that was one of Prabhupada's great qualities, if you connect with anyone.
One day there was, I forget where it was, but Prabhupada was on some morning walks, and every day they would see this man sitting in a car. And the man was really morose. He was just like, he was sitting in the car like this. And every day they would walk past. And on about the fourth or fifth morning, the man was there every morning. And then Prabhupada left the group. He walked over to the car. And the man was, you know, the window was up. But when the man saw Prabhupada come, he rolled the window down. And Prabhupada said, "Good morning." And he smiled. And then the man said, "Good morning." And then Prabhupada just walked away. And it was as if the man had never noticed Prabhupada and the devotees over the last few mornings. But then the devotees looked back, and they saw that his very morose and sad face had now changed. And the deep feeling of sadness had left him. And Prabhupada had just from saying good morning, he changed his whole appearance. The man looked refreshed and peaceful and satisfied.
Just to see the picture on the front of your ever well-wisher of Prabhupada sitting there with his head slightly tilted, his eyes and his smile, just so sweet like that. Just seeing that, the cover of that book gave me a lot of faith, a lot of strength. Yeah.
When Prabhupada was in Madras, or he was driving in a car, and he looked out the car when they saw many people standing in line for the bus, the bus station, and he came, his eyes filled with tears, and he said, they have to wait for so long. He felt so compassionate for them. Another time in America, we were walking, and I went past the golf course, and Prabhupada looked, what are they doing? And the devotees, you know, kind of snickered. They're playing golf, Prabhupada. And he said, what is that golf? He said, well, they hit a small ball into a hole with a stick. And it sounded so funny that the devotees started laughing, you know. And Prabhupada looked, they are wasting their lives. And a tear came down his face. And then all the devotees were quiet. The whole mood changed. The Prabhupada's mood of compassion just smothered their snickering and the humor of the situation. But on other occasions, Prabhupada exhibited a kind of transcendental callousness towards the living entities. And this kind of thing you can't really understand, because in some circumstances the smallest thing would make him feel compassion and cry. But in other times he was completely impervious and almost callous. There was once he was also driving in South India with Harishari and some others, and they were on the highway. And on the highway there was a ghastly scene, there was a ghastly accident. A truck had ran over a man, and he was just, it was just a puddle of blood on the highway. He was just completely creamed, like a pancake, just flattened on the, and the man's wife was there, and she was screaming, you know, bloody murder. And she was hysterical. And she was there screaming. And the car just slowly went past this scene, and the devotees in the car, they were aghast. They just saw this bloody mess, and the woman's face, she was screaming. And they just kind of cringed. But Prabhupada just went, it was like that. No expression. So the person who's living, actually knows he doesn't lament for the living on the dead. You can understand this is the situation. Interesting that how one such a small thing can make them feel so cry, and in such a ghastly scene, it wouldn't move him sometimes at all. On a lighter note, in Vrindavan, once the Prabhupada was walking around the temple, and all of the devotees were just kind of following him, like ducklings following their mother. And he was walking very aristocratically with his cane, as usual, and his chadar thrown over his shoulder. And they walked into the temple. Prabhupada was pointing out different things that were wrong. You know, that something was dirty. The water was dripping. So he stopped the water faucet. And they went inside the temple. And, on the right side, the first room is like a life membership room now. So that room they walk into, and they brought a chair for Prabhupada, and Prabhupada sat there with his cane. And all the devotees who were around him, and then all the devotees just sat down around him, just looking up at him, just waiting for him to say something. And Prabhupada looked at them and said, "Why have you allowed illicit sex in this temple?" And the devotees just, "What?" And Prabhupada just repeated, "You have allowed illicit sex in this temple." And the voice, "Really, Prabhupada?" And the voice was like looking at each other. And one of the said, "Really, Prabhupada?" He said, "Yes." And Prabhupada took his cane and slowly moved it up, pointing to the fan on the ceiling. And there were two pigeons. Fan. Yes, illicit sex. And the boy just followed the cane with him. So after that, they put this pigeon, metal mesh around the entire temple. So, pigeons. That's why they put after that name like that. The temple is covered, completely covered. But still, the birds, they come in and
there was a nectar. We have squirrels living in our temple.
Or in Vancouver.
Yeah,
I guess we've got 5 acres of woodland right there, right between the two temples. So.
Mm-hmm. When Prabhupada was installing the deity in London, there was a bit of a miracle, that in Buried Place, Radha and Krishna, Radha long and short, there was these two pillars. And then on top there was a platform, and then they had Jagannath on top.
They're installing it.
Yeah. So the temple room was filled with people, and it was hot. It was a summer day. And there was a film crew there. And all the devotees and Indian people were there. And the crowd into the hallway and trailing out the door of the building, actually, where people were trying to get in. And Prabhupada was on the altar with Jamuna, Tamal Krishna Maharaj,
and Gurudas.
Gurudas, and other devotees. And suddenly those pillars started shaking, because they weren't, secured. And Prabhupada, who was on the other side doing something near Jamuna, on the other side of Jamuna. Jamuna was in front of Krishna, and Prabhupada was all the way on the other side. And Prabhupada jumped all the way across. Jamuna said that she never saw a human being move so fast in her whole life. In a half a second.
This was all crashing down.
Yeah, it was like coming down. And then Prabhupada just came, and with his right hand, he took Radharani's hand, holding Radharani's hand with his left hand. He held up this extremely heavy platform, which later took 3 devotees to hold. So Prabhupada, with one hand, was holding up the whole thing. And he was holding the interesting thing. Usually a person with both hands, but with one hand he was holding Radharani's hand. And he was getting shakti from her.
Just
to hold up another platform. Amazing. And then practically the same, similar thing happened. Of course, at that time, then the devotees had to take out these columns. Or anyway, that's the other passage. So in Amsterdam, a similar thing. They had this installation of Jagannath. The Prabhupada came into the temple, sat on the Vyasasana, and he quickly noticed that everything was a mess. There was no flowers, there was no fruits, there was, the sacrificial pit was not decorated, and devotees were just wandering around, and they didn't know what was going on. And Prabhupada said, "What's going on here? Where are the fruits? Where are the flowers? Lord Jagannath has come, and there's no fruits for the sacrifice?" Meaning, whole fruits decorating the yogi pit. So, the devotee ran into the kitchen 10 minutes later, came back with a big bowl of fruit salad. So here's the fruit crowd. Prabhupada became more angry. So he said, "This is the fruit you've brought? He said, who's in charge here? Who's the temple president? Tell him to come now. And Prabhupada was fuming. And, you know, there was a film crew there, you know, filming the whole thing. There was gas, all devotees, the whole temple was packed. But Prabhupada didn't care. The temple president came and he started giving him the sauce, like learning Srimad. He said, you've invited Lord Jagannath, and now you've neglected him. You're not qualified to be the president here. How can you act in such a way? The president was like, really? Like, getting it. And you know, the film crew was filming this, you know, and Prabhupada was giving it to him right in front of the cameras. The president was shaking, you know. So he just went away. At that time, there was a hippie boy that was next to Prabhupada, standing by the Vyasa, who had a little crazy. Sometimes when he would get angry or do something silly, the devotees would just say, just chant Hare Krishna. So he looked at Prabhupada and said, just chant Hare Krishna. And Prabhupada looked at him and said, oh, thank you. He said, you have given me the best advice for today. And he took, Prabhupada took his japa beads and he started chanting.
Is that movie documented anywhere? Is it available?
Oh, the movie?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
I asked Kadamakana Maharaj about that last week.
He said they're trying to get it. Manhattan.
Oh yeah, with Dr.
Mishra's yoga studio.
Amazing.
He had footage from that, and there was ladies there in leotards doing yoga, and Prabhupada was serving food to the people. Yeah.
Give a lecture and give a
yeah. But the story goes on. So Prabhupada, they did the installation ceremony, and but they made the altar, the Singhasana was too small. So when they brought Jagannath there, they couldn't fit him in onto the Singhasana. So they had to come with saws and they just sawed the top of the thing off so that they could put him there. So then the devotees, you know, with their Harinam Chaturs, the Brahmins came holding this the top of the Singhasana, and you know the film crew filmed it like it was part of the ceremony. Now the Brahmins are coming with the ceremonial, you know. Oh, there it is. So they made some cloth hanging down because it gave them more space, and then finally they opened the curtains and they had the whole thing. You know, the whole room was full of smoke. People were gasping. It was very hot. And, you know. So then Prabhupada got into the car in front of the temple. And then he asked Nanda Kumar, his servant, said, did you bring me some Mahaprasad? And he said, no, Srila Prabhupada. He said, please bring me some. He said, yes, Prabhupada. So Nanda Kumar went inside and got a plate of Jagannath Mahaprasad. And then he got into the car. Prabhupada was in the front, he was in the back, and then they just drove away. So he had put the prasadam on the seat, so as soon as the car started, boom, and fell flat down. Face down, upside down, on the floor. And it was filled with sand and bits of dirt and hair, you know, the floor was dirty. So Nanda Kumar was just... He had already seen Prabhupada give it to the TP, he was afraid.
No, it was his turn.
Yeah, it was his turn, but he thought, if I tell him now, I'll get the sauce. But if he goes inside and then he doesn't notice, then I'll get some more later and I'll bring some. So he didn't say anything. So they drove up to the flat, they stopped the car outside. Prabhupada immediately turned and said, so the prasadam you have? Oh, Prabhupada, I'm sorry, the prasadam fell on the floor. So that's all right. You give it, bring it to me anyway. But Prabhupada, it's filthy. It's all right. You bring it to me. So Prabhupada went inside, and Nanda Kumara scraped the prasadam off of the floor of this car and put it back on the plate, tried to pick out as much of the dirt as he could. And Prabhupada ate the whole plate. I mean, usually Prabhupada would just take a little bit, and then, but he ate the whole plate of prasadam. Then later, the TP came, and he was feeling really bad. He came to apologize, came in to see Prabhupada. And he saw Prabhupada was just like in ecstasy. He was just grinning ear to ear. And he said, Prabhupada, I want to apologize to you. Come, so that's okay. He said, Prabhupada, you were so angry just a few minutes ago, and now you're so blissful. And he said, yes, a devotee is like the ocean. There may be some disturbances on the surface, but deep down, he's satisfied. And then he saw something which he never saw, the most amazing thing. Prabhupada got on his bed, laid down, and pulled his knees up, and was laying back, holding his knees, and he was rolling back and forth on the bed. Haribo! 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 Like this. And you know, the devotees looked at him, they felt that he was with Mahaprabhu. Or they was like with the Lord. They couldn't conceive of what was happening. How is he? People just rolling back and forth on the bed like a child. That's the end of the pastor. Some more miracles. There's Leela's of the famous the coconut. They were at a train station in India. Very hot. Shamasundar, Guru Kripa, five others were doing Harinam. So Prabhupada came, and Shamasundar climbed the coconut tree and got the coconut down. So they had it open and gave it to Prabhupada. Prabhupada drank from it for a long time, and he gave it to Shamasundar. Shamasundar said, yes. And he drank a long time. Prabhupada said, give it to the devotees doing kirtan. So Shamasundar brought it over to Guru Kripa, who was the leader. And Guru Kripa, he said that he didn't even think about the other devotees. He said it was so hot and he was so thirsty that he just took the coconut, determined to polish it off, you know. He just started slugging down the juice and it was pouring down all over his t-shirt, you know. And he was just drinking and drinking and drinking. And it was not finished. And he gave it to the other devotees, and next devotee, each devotee just considered that that's it, I'm going to finish it, you know. And he drank and really a long time, and then gave it to the next devotee, and Prabhupada was looking, and they were all looking at him. Like, and Prabhupada was smiling and moving his head like this. That's the famous coconut.
Jesus can do it, Prabhupada can do it.
In Bombay, there were some interesting leelas like that. There was this Mr. Sethi, who was helping Prabhupada when he first came there. And Prabhupada, he would go on all the morning walks. And one day, he came there, and he had his neck brace, because he had hurt himself, and the doctor gave him this big neck brace. Like a big collar. You've seen them, I'm sure. Yeah. So Prabhupada looked at it and said, what is this? And Mr. Sethi said, oh, I hurt myself, and the doctor said I should wear this. Prabhupada said, you don't need this. Take it off. So he took it off and he went, hey, you're right. I don't need it. Another time, the same man came, and his father had... some relatives from Hyderabad had called him, or somewhere near there, that his father was ill, he should come. So, as he mentioned to Prabhupada on the morning, well, Prabhupada, I'm sorry, I won't be here for a few days because my father's ill and I have to go see him. Prabhupada said, your father's all right. He said that he'll meet you at the station. He's all right. But Mr. Sethi didn't quite catch what he meant, or, you know,
So anyway, the next day he got on the train, he went. And sure enough, his father met him at the station, completely healthy. And he said, you don't need to come here now. You can go back. He just got on the train and went back. Caught the next train back. Another time, the famous Natji, right? Natji, his name was Desai before, right?
Big investment.
Yeah. Wealthy man was still there in the community. He was, if I remember correctly, he was a bit of a race driver or something like him. And he had a very nice car. Prabhupada was there. It was towards the end, I think it was 76 or 77. Prabhupada had come to Bombay. And Tamal Krishna was there, Brahmananda. And Prabhupada was going back to this train station, catch a train back to Vrindavan. And the train was scheduled for 6 o'clock. So they got into the car. Natji was Mr. Desai at the time, driving. And then Brahmananda and Tamal Krishna in the front. And Prabhupada was laying in the back of the car. And so Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked him to drive very slowly because Prabhupada would be laying down in the back, didn't want to be bumped. So he was going very slowly. And after maybe 10, 15 minutes, Prabhupada said, drive faster, otherwise they'll miss the train. So,
but the train was 2 hours.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be much later.
Yeah, so so he wasn't quite sure what to do. He started driving faster. Then Tamal Krishna was, bam, stop, drive slower. Prabhupada's just there. So he didn't know what to do. Prabhupada was telling him to go faster. He was telling him to go slower. And Prabhupada said, drive faster, we'll miss the train. So, you know, so he started driving faster. He could have started scooting between the traffic. And so then finally they got there, it was maybe 5:20 something, 5:15. So Brahmananda got out to check what was going on, what track the train was on. They found out that the train actually was coming at 5:30 now. And that if they went slowly, they would have missed the train. But Prabhupada somehow knew. He just said, we have to hurry. And they got there just in time, and they escorted Prabhupada on the train, and they got on the train. So these are some of the superhuman leelas of Prabhupada that sometimes we hear about. Well, there's another one like that, Bhat Subhag in London. Subhag Maharaj is Bengali, but he joined in London. And so Prabhupada enjoyed speaking with him a lot because he was a fellow Bengali, and they were speaking Bengali together. So he asked Subhag, where are you from? Calcutta. Oh, what neighborhood are you from? So Subhag told him a neighborhood which was close to his neighborhood. Because Bengali is very class conscious. And so he told him a neighborhood which was a little higher than his. So the next day in the lecture, Prabhupada was giving a lecture in the temple, and he said, one should never lie to the spiritual master. And he was like looking at Subhag. And Subhag in his mind he thought, yes, that's true, but that was just a small lie. And Prabhupada said, not even a small lie. but even more, he said it in Bengali. And Subhag was the only Bengali devotee in the world. Just see the power of Prabhupada's. Yeah. I mean, the guru is not omniscient, but he... Yeah, Krishna gives him some information. So.
There's one story also in this regard. Prabhupada is giving a class and the audience is a bit challenging. And it's in India. And the man asked for Prabhupada, well, if you know everything, Can you tell me how many cars on that on the train, how many wagons, carriers on the train going from that city to that city? So Prabhupada said 33.
He said what?
33.
33?
Yeah. And the man is completely flabbergasted. He sat down. Difficult. So then everyone is shocked. And then at the end of the class, his disciples surround Srila Prabhupada and ask him, how did you manage? It's amazing. So Prabhupada explained that way back when he was a Grihastha, he was waiting the train in that station, and he happened to count the number of carriers.
And he remembered it.
And then he said to the disciple, he said, you should never let your mind idle, always do something with your mind. And that information he gathered at that time was meant to be useful later.
That's great.
One young boy in Vrindavan, it's in his early teens, told him a story that when his father, when Prabhupada first came to New York, he was out on the street with some literature, some pamphlets or something, he was out, or books. Oh, it was a Srimad Bhagavatam. It was a Bhagavatam that he brought. And he was going from person to person on the street saying, please look at this. Just approaching people in the street. So this boy's father was going down the street and Prabhupada approached him. He was speaking to him. He was busy. He was going to join the army. And so he was like, no. And probably kept walking with him for a while. And but he was busy. He was going in. And so he looked back once and probably was sort of looking after him. And then he turned and he started approaching other people. And many years later, his father had been in the army, come back, joined a temple. And Prabhupada was, and I forget which temple, but the devotees were lined up on two sides. And, Jai Prabhupada, Chanti Chanti. Prabhupada walked down, he walked past, and he turned around and walked back. So the voice probably said, I knew you would come back.
10 seconds.
That reminds me of another another amazing lila that Prabhupada had a godbrother named Dol Govind Shastri who was teaching Sanskrit in the same building that Prabhupada was living in Calcutta. He godbrother of his, and he was wondering about the prophecy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that the Germans, Russians, and French would come to Mayapur and chant Gaura Hari, like that. So, and he said, this prediction is there. And Prabhupada said, you have some doubt? And Dol Shastri said, no, he said, the Thakur has said, but how it will happen? You know? So Prabhupada said, well, he said, one surrendered fool of one of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Prabhupada's, one of his disciples, one surrendered fool will surely go and do this. And then Prabhupada turned, he was just kind of walking away as he spoke, and he turned and was opening the door, and then he turned and he added, and not you. But he said it in the plural in Bengali, which meant not all of you, like this. So then, you know, I thought, oh, what did he mean by that? You mean it would be him? Mm-hmm. So anyway, many years passed, and Dol Govind Shastri left Gaudiya Math, and he got married, started working, moved to Cuttack with his family, and years had passed. And he was walking down the streets of Cuttack, and suddenly he saw a huge white person, Westerner, with dhoti and sika and tila on the rickshaw going down the road. So he was shocked, and he came up to him, and he was so shocked to see a Westerner, Gaudiya Vaishnava yet,
And he came up to him and he just stopped the rickshaw. And he said, "Who are you? Where are you from? What the, how can you?" And he was almost incoherent. It was Bhagavad Das, our Dharavad, and big Bhagavad. And Bhagavad said, "I am the disciple of Sri Srimad Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Ashtotarashata Sri Srimad." And he was speaking with such, the accent was so thick that the man couldn't, he said, what? Who was this guy? He said, Prabhupada. He pulled out from his bag a BTG and he showed a picture of Prabhupada. And then the man said, "Abhai Babu, you did it! You're the one! After all these years!" He just couldn't believe it. He was shocked that Prabhupada had told him that. So I guess we can stop now. That's a good one to stop on. Shiva Prabhupada ki jai. Shiva Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Guru Premanand.